This is Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. I'm Tower, and this is ATIS, your aviation news briefing for the week. We've got a lot to unpack today, and most of it hits close to home if you fly in or anywhere near controlled airspace. So let's get right to it. Today's aviation news is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Gear, apparel, and gifts for the aviation obsessed. If you've got a pilot in your life or you're that pilot, check them out. Here's what you need to know. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is facing a staffing and budget situation that is now directly affecting the system you and I fly in every single day. And I don't mean in some abstract policy way. I mean delays. I mean facilities running below minimum staffing. I mean the potential for reduced services at towers and approach controls that serve general aviation pilots. Let's start with the numbers, because the numbers tell the story. The FAA has been short on controllers for years. That's not new. What is new is the scale. The agency's own workforce plan calls for roughly 15,000 certified professional controllers to keep the system running safely and efficiently. Right now, there's somewhere around 10,800. That is a gap of over 4,000 controllers. And instead of closing that gap, recent budget pressures and a federal hiring freeze have made it wider. The FAA did get some exemptions from the broader federal hiring freeze, but those exemptions have been narrow and slow to implement. Training pipelines at the FAA Academy in Oklahoma City have been running at reduced capacity. And here's the thing about air traffic control. You can't just hire someone off the street and put them on a scope. The training pipeline from academy to facility certification takes 2 to 3 years on average. Some facilities, it's closer to 4. So even in the best case scenario, where hiring ramps back up tomorrow, you're not going to feel the relief for years. What does this actually mean for you as a pilot?
First, expect continued delays at busy airports, especially during peak traffic windows. If you're flying into Class Bravo or Class Charlie airspace during the morning push or the evening bank, you may see longer hold times, extended sequencing, and ground stops that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago with fuller staffing. Second, and this is the one that hits GA pilots hardest, some facilities are already cutting hours. We've seen approach controls and towers at smaller airports reduce their operating hours or go to part-time status. If your home field has a part-time tower, pay attention to the published hours. They may change with little notice, and if a tower that used to be open until 10 at night is now closing at 8, that changes your flight planning. Third, the FAA has been consolidating some terminal radar approach control facilities, known as TRACONs. That means the controller who used to handle just your local area might now be working a much larger sector. More airspace per controller means less flexibility for you. Expect tighter routing, less accommodation for direct requests, and longer waits for flight following during busy periods. Now, the headline doesn't tell the whole story on the budget side either. The FAA's overall budget has been a subject of continuing resolutions and stopgap funding for the better part of 2 years. When the agency can't plan its spending more than a few months at a time, long-term investments in hiring, training, and equipment, modernization slow down or stall entirely. The Next Generation Air Transportation System, NextGen, which was supposed to modernize the airspace and make it more efficient, has seen timelines slip further. And modernization matters for staffing too. Updated automation tools could help controllers manage more traffic safely. But if the tools don't get funded, you need more bodies in the facility, and we just talked about where that stands. This affects you if you fly anywhere in the national airspace system, but especially if you operate out of airports that sit in that middle tier. Not the huge hubs with political clout to keep staffing up, and not the little uncontrolled fields. The mid-sized towered airports and approach controls are the ones most vulnerable to cuts. So what should you do about it? Three things. Check notices to air missions, or NOTAMs, more carefully before every flight. Tower hour reductions and temporary closures are published there, and they can change week to week. Build more flexibility into your flight planning. If you're flying into a busy terminal area, give yourself extra fuel and extra time. Don't plan a flight where a 30-minute ATC delay turns it into a fuel emergency, and stay engaged. The FAA takes public comment on staffing plans and budget priorities. Organizations like the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, AOPA, and the Experimental Aircraft Association, EAA, actively lobby on these issues. Your membership and your voice matter. Now, shifting gears to another story that's making waves this week. A proposal from the Department of Homeland Security could affect international flight operations at up to 11 U.S. airports, including some of the biggest names in aviation. We're talking John F. Kennedy International, Los Angeles International, and others. The proposal from DHS Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen suggests withdrawing customs and border protection officers from airports in cities that have certain local immigration enforcement policies. Now, I'm going to stay in my lane here. The immigration policy debate is not what ATIS covers, but the aviation implications are significant and worth understanding. If Customs and Border Protection pulls out of an airport, that airport cannot process international arrivals, period. no customs, no international flights. For a place like JFK, which handles tens of thousands of international passengers every single day, that would be an operational earthquake. Airlines would have to reroute. Passengers would divert to other airports that are already near capacity. And the ripple effects through the entire national airspace system would be enormous. For GA pilots, the impact would be less direct but still real. Any airport that loses its international port of entry status affects pilots who fly cross-border. If you fly to Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean, or the Bahamas, you file an EAPIS and you land at a designated port of entry. If your usual port of entry loses that designation, even temporarily, you need a new plan. This is still a proposal at this point. Nothing has been implemented, but it's worth watching because the operational consequences for aviation would be substantial. We'll keep tracking it. Simple Flying first reported on the scope of that proposal. Credit to them for laying out which airports could be affected.
All right, let's bring it back to the big picture. The theme today is that the infrastructure behind the airspace, the people, the funding, the facilities, is under real pressure. None of this means the system is unsafe. The controllers who are working are doing an exceptional job with the resources they have, but the margins are thinner than they used to be, and as pilots, we need to plan accordingly. Fly with a little more patience, a little more fuel, a little more awareness of what's going on in the system around you. That's your ATIS briefing for today. Sources for this segment include reporting from AveWeb, AOPA, Simple Flying, and FAA workforce planning documents. As always, Radio Hangar is an AI-generated broadcast built by people who love aviation. Every segment cites its sources, and we're upfront about how this show is made. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Build yourself some extra margin out there. We'll talk again soon. Radio Hangar, clear skies and tailwinds.